Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to talk about the second most widely used web server on the internet. It's called Nginx. You might not have heard of it, but you will after this show. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 283, recorded February 12, 2014, Nginx. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the small projects, the projects you might be using every day, and sometimes even the projects you might be using every day without even knowing about it, like I think this week's show is going to be all about, but we'll see in a few moments. With me today, again, is my frequently co-host. Let's see if I can just blow the whole opening of the show. Aaron Newcomb, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Randall. Good to be here.
and you're in the Twit brick house, I can tell.
I am. I'm in the brick house. I'm in the living room set here with the comfy chairs and kind of relaxed vibe, you know. Mm-hmm. It's good to be back. I haven't been on a show in months, so it's good to be back.
Well, thanks for coming out to be my co-host today. This is going to be a pretty cool show. There's already a buzz developing for the show's topic in the chat room. That's how interesting the show I expect will be. We have none other than Nginx. Nginx. I've been trying to get on the show for a long time, and finally we pulled it all together. Sarah Novotny, who is the new community manager for Nginx, agreed to be on the show to talk about it. But let's talk about what Nginx is. It originally started as some sort of a reverse proxy server. So if you have something that maybe has dynamic pages, you would put this in front of your web server so that it would cache the result of what happened and allow it to be delivered over the network, and your dynamic page generators could go on to something else, something next. And I've used it in that manner before. I've also used Apache itself as a reverse proxy server. But Nginx is, every time I look at it, it adds like six more new features. I'm even using it now in one of my projects as an origin server, which means it's actually generating web pages by looking at the file system and looking at certain things on the file system. So, I just noticed in the documentation it can also do SMTP proxy, and I wonder what else it has in it. It sounds like it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. What do you know about Nginx?
Well, I've only heard of it in that context as well. So I looked into it when I was doing some website work back at one of my old jobs and was like, oh, okay, well, maybe this would be useful if our traffic ever gets high enough that we need this, and you know, we never kind of reached that threshold. But I definitely was looking into it, so I'm kind of excited to hear what some of the more recent trends and developments are for this project.
True, and again, as I was researching for this morning's show, I also noticed that it claims to serve 14 or 15% of the world's websites. Mm. So I don't know whether that's just a reverse proxy capability or whether it's actually origin serving or whatever, but you know, that probably means that everybody who's listening to this show has probably hit Nginx at least once or twice already this morning, or whenever you're listening to the show, sorry. All right. We're taping it in the morning, but that may not be when you're listening to it. Come on, Randall. All right, so Anyway, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Sarah Novotny. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Randall. Thanks for inviting me to join you guys.
Very cool, very cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from Seattle, Washington. This is my lovely office.
Cool, cool. And for those who aren't watching the video, it's an office. So, what do I need to describe that for? That's just silly. Occasionally, I'm like that. So I think I gave a fairly accurate high-level description of Nginx at the beginning of the show, but why don't you go ahead and give us your version of that?
Well, you certainly did. Nginx is a project that was started in 2002 with the first public release made by Igor Sisoyev in 2004. So it's just about 10 years old here in October. And the first case that he was really trying to fix was having a high level of concurrency for web delivery, web traffic delivery. And back in 2002, this was a whole lot harder than it is today. And we didn't even see the sort of concurrency levels that we're seeing today with multiple devices and all of the fun of everything online that exists now. So back then there was sort of this mythical C10K, 10,000 concurrent users on a server. And could someone build something that could serve that? And that was the ring, that was the brass ring that Igor was trying to capture at the time. He was working for Rambler, which is a search engine in Russia, and they were having concurrency issues. So he set out to find a way to make things faster on the web and not have a linear scaling server utilization as we linearly scaled users, which is roughly what Apache does for memory, right? Or even still.
So what's different about NGINX then? How does it get to that place when Apache can't do it quite like that?
Well, there's a big difference in what NGINX has architecturally. So it's event-driven and has a few processes, whereas where events are handed off to different worker processes, whereas Apache will spawn a thread for every connection. And as we know, that scales linearly, certainly for memory, as far as making a copy of the binary into memory each time. So you see there's a great graph that Ryan Dahl used in his original Node.js talk that shows the picture of his server health as he scaled users across both NGINX and Apache. And that image just really, to me, speaks loads, because you see a very up and to the right sort of graph that shows that Apache takes up more and more memory and compute resources, and NGINX stays nice and flat and keeps handling all the concurrency as it needs to. That is only facilitated by an absolute religion and dogma about non-blocking events within the NGINX core.
Okay, so I'm going to get a little more geeky here for a second, because I do know pretty much about the architecture of event-driven programming, as well as the way Apache typically does it with worker processes.
Well, you may actually outstrip me, so
okay,
we'll have to figure that out.
Just yell at me if I get too far deep into that. Okay. So I just wanted to say that Apache, in the typical configuration that it has, you would typically say, okay, based on the amount of memory I have in the machine, I'm going to run at most 120 concurrent processes. And that would mean that only 120 different connections could really be serviced in any sort of way, and the rest would all just queue up by either the operating system or by some little things that Apache can do to take care of that. And you're kind of limited to that, because each new child process that you add adds more memory to be there. Whereas event-driven programming, the way NGINX does it, there's only a few worker processes, and as the events come in, it can quickly deal them out and then return the responses back to make it all work quickly. And that, I think I got that right, but like I said, I may be more geeky than you on that. But
you did.
Is that sort of the gist?
It is. There's a lot of there's a lot of programming time spent making sure that we can do a lot of things asynchronously and that we don't block on any single request. The big limitation there, of course, remains disk. So we do as much as we can with memory. And if we need to go out to disk, logging, for example, is a space where there are very specific choices that have been made so that we can keep the blocking as minimal as possible.
So let's talk about the typical use cases for NGINX. I mentioned proxy before, and also some origin server stuff. Are those the two main use cases, or is there other mixes in there?
There's a whole lot in there. And actually, one of the talks that I'm going to propose for Velocity New York is 5 things you didn't know NGINX did. So I'm going to have a lot of fun sharing this as people get to learn more about NGINX. So you've got web service. So you basically have, I can offer to you static content. You can connect up with application servers, so you can run it as a proxy into any sort of application server you want. It's tightly connected with UISKI. It also works very well with the different PHP backends. And so you can use it as a proxy into an application server. You can use it as a proxy to another web server. You can use it as an edge cache. You can use it as a load balancer in front of different web services. What else do I have on my list? You mentioned SMTP earlier, which is an interesting one. There's an SMTP proxy in front of it. We're looking at developing in that space from web server to client. So anything that can help your application move faster to an end client is where we're spending our time developing right now. In the longer term, there's also ideas of going back closer to the application server as well. But right now, the work is being spent in that space that's developing that used to be owned by hardware. So the F5 or the Edge Cache, or another thing it does is SSL termination for you, and it'll do the acceleration and termination for you. So that sort of space that used to be owned by hardware when people weren't out in the clouds is where a lot of the attention and work is going right now.
Now, by SSL termination, I just want to make sure that's clear, because it's actually a really interesting feature, is that I would have, say, one box named Stonehenge.com with an SSL certificate for it. I could put Nginx on there and then have it farm out requests not over SSL, so it's lesser load, to my second tier of servers, and they could then deliver the result, but they're delivering it back through the SSL connection that the Nginx delivered in front, correct?
Which then ends up encrypting it out to the end client, yes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. How did you get involved with the project?
That's a long question.
we got time, don't worry.
I started hearing about it a very, very long time ago from staff of mine that were saying, we have to run this, it's so much better, here's why. You know, yes, all the documentation is in Russian, but I swear we can do it. So this is going back to 2004, 2005. So I first got involved at a very peripheral level as an end user paying attention to the project, probably around 2006 or 2008. Mm-hmm. And then this last fall, I decided to take some time off after an interesting adventure in the video game publishing world, which is so far away from open source that I decided I really needed to move a lot closer. And I wanted to learn more, move from the technical side to more marketing and community evangelism with my work at OzCon. I've really found that I enjoy sharing my excitement about projects with people and with users, and then trying to facilitate those conversations back to developers. And so I started looking for a position that looked more like an evangelism position. And I ended up talking to probably three dozen companies. And Nginx was the right size at the right time with the right drive. As you mentioned, we have 140 million sites being served today in some capacity or another through Nginx, and that is roughly 15% of the internet traffic at this point. Within the top 1,000 fastest sites, or most popular and most heavily utilized sites. So again, the ones that fit our use case best with the high concurrency, or that need that capacity, we've got nearly 40% of that market. So I think it's 37% most recently. So you see a lot of really excited people talking about this, and yet because it's been this amazing open source project out of Russia, there's been less attention paid to sort of the user side interface, not the technical user interface, but how would someone playing with this tool get feedback? And they have a very active mailing list and a great community that's already started and really self-regulating. And so being able to come into that and then amplify and help that community be even more effective and even more productive and put up even more documentation is really what was the drive for me. So I lucked out that they were looking at the same time I happened to be as well. So I was introduced to the Nginx team and got to spend my first week in Russia, which was loads of fun. We're also going to do a user summit in October, and this is where I get to do the shameless plug, because I've sent you guys a 20% off the Nginx training, our first chance speaking to all of this point about making it more accessible to people who might want to deploy it. We're doing our first Nginx summit February 25th, and the morning part is our first outing of a new fundamentals course about Nginx. So if you've heard of Nginx but haven't played with it, want to do a 3-hour install, play with it, do some base configuration of a proxy server, some static content serving, you know, some of the use cases that we talked about, it's a great space to take a look at that. And in the show notes, I sent Randall a 20% off coupon for that training course in the morning. The afternoon is going to be more speakers from the community. So Igor, the founder of the project and the guy who wrote the first version, We'll be talking about the beginning, the evolution, and the future of Nginx. So we'll have him talking, and then we'll have one of the largest, most heavily active and heavily contributing module developers who's going to speak as well that afternoon, Yichun. He is going to be talking about module development within the ecosystem of Nginx, because we do so many different pieces of edge content delivery, we want to also make an ecosystem out there so that we can help people in all of those different ways deliver content.
So when you say you sent that coupon code, that's just for me and Randall, right?
Right, absolutely. Only you two. was I not supposed to mention that on...
No, it's fine. It's fine. We will put it in the show notes, and we do appreciate the offer there. We don't normally take bribes like that, but I'll go ahead and put that in the show notes since this is such an important important task.
No, I'm sure our listeners will love to, you know, get a little discount if they're available to attend.
Yeah, and the afternoon portion, this is the part I'm really excited about. So the afternoon portion, which is just a couple of conversations, or, you know, a couple of talks and then some user lightning talks. The afternoon portion, all of the proceeds for that, so we have a small fee on it so that we know that people will attend, because we found that if you do free events, people say they're coming but then don't. So the afternoon summit portion, that's just Igor and Yichun and the customer lightning talks, and then some social time, all of the proceeds from that are going to go to OSI, which I'm super excited about. I had a conversation with Simon about that at FOSDEM. So I'm going to be able to make a contribution on behalf of Nginx to OSI based on this summit.
Cool. So Nginx sounds a lot like, I mean, and I guess this is based on where it comes from, the time period it comes from. You know, LeetSpeak was really big kind of in the mid-2000s there. And so I'm guessing it comes out of the LeetSpeak era. But it also sounds a little bit like RacerX, right, from Speed Racer.
Right.
So I'm just kind of wondering, I know you talked a little bit about the history and how it got started, but where did the name come from?
I actually don't know that story, so I will have to investigate that one and maybe put it up as a blog post for, you know, the fun fodder that needs to go into blogs at some point.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know where it goes, but I do know it is one of the most common questions I get. How do you pronounce that?
Well, I was wondering that too, because I never said it out loud before, right?
Yep.
So you know, you type it, write it, or blog about it, whatever, but I never actually had to speak it out loud.
Yep.
So I was kind of curious about that too. Thankfully, you know, Randall got it right, of course, right off the bat, as he usually does. I wonder if we can go back, just backstep a little bit. I want to make sure that everyone's on the same playing field. This is a pretty technical audience, so most people know when we say reverse proxying server or HTTP server, I mean, people know what that is in general.
Right.
But then there is a segment of our audience that may be completely lost at this point. So I just want to make sure that we level set here and explain why someone would need. I mean, you talked about concurrency, right, which is you know, having as many people be able to get to a website at one time.
Right.
You know, so that people don't sit there and wonder why the website's not responding. So why would someone want to do this either with Apache or Nginx? Why is this caching mechanism? And what is reverse proxy? What is it? Why do you even need a proxy?
Right. So let me start with the caching side for a moment. So caching is Randall mentioned you may have dynamic pages, and that takes more time to process and more time to make available to an end user. So right now we know that users have an attention span of, you know, less than 6 seconds before something has to be showing up on a web page before they abandon. Now, I know people who have much lower tolerances, myself included. You know, if I can't get something to come up on in a web browser in something more like 2 seconds, I am likely to be like, okay, whatever, I don't need to know that. So we know that we need to get content to end users as fast as we possibly can. And we know that all of our users are also looking at and expecting more dynamic content. So one of the things that we can do with caching is pre-generate some portions of that dynamic content and have it ready and available as pieces of content to be put together and stitched together at the far end with the client. So offloading much of that work into a space where it is sort of pre-digested or pre-composed in a prefab model so that you don't have to go all the way through the application server, go down to the database, double check who I am, and then send it all the way back up through the application stack is a way, caching is a way to do that once and then deliver to me all of those assets in a much faster way after the first load. So that handles the edge caching. Proxying can do some of the same sorts of things, not as much towards speeding things up, but more making a seamless user experience. So you're going to the same place for your content. So you would type, say, www.nginx, but a portion of it might be served from somewhere else. So it says, if this is www.nginx.com/wiki, we might actually send you to a different location to find out, or a different server. And it makes it simpler for you to have a single location to get the content from, and then we can serve it from different places on the back end. So that's one reason for a proxy. Another reason for a proxy would then be to you can do URL obfuscation, so you could send content from different locations, different web servers, different possibilities. You can embed further content. It's a way to ask one place for content from multiple locations.
So that's kind of like there's two flows. There's one coming in from the outside, but then you also do, like, let's say I had an organization or a company, and I wanted to funnel everybody that's going to the outside internet from the inside.
Now that,
you can do that as well.
A forward proxy.
A forward proxy, or a normal proxy, or a forward proxy. You can do that as well.
I believe we can. I haven't made use of it in that sense. The forward proxy is more for an enterprise space where they want to make sure they're trapping all the traffic and all the all of the traffic is going there. But I believe it can work that way as well.
Yeah, I know we use that at work. If I go to, you know, www.whatever site that my work does, the Pornhub or whatever those things are, that they will filter that out, and they'll send me a message back saying, hey, you hit this proxy, and this is a site we don't want our people going to, so, you know, shame on you, you know, we're going to tell your manager or something. I don't know what they say, but
I'm not positive we can do the sort of porn filtering variant of the proxy, but it wouldn't surprise me if we could. Haven't tried to.
I would imagine. I mean, I would assume the mechanism is basically the same. It's just one's going one way, the other's going the other way. The other question I had was, what about other applications that do caching as well? So I'm thinking like Drupal or, different PHP applications, maybe a WordPress site. Some of those offer, as an option, caching mechanisms that you can turn on or off. How does that work with Nginx? In terms of, does it bypass, if I'm caching in my application, does it work with Nginx to cache it one step further, or how does that work together?
I'm not entirely sure if we have integrated specifically with the end caching of the application servers, so I'd have to go do research on that one. But I do know that WordPress.com makes use of Nginx for their web service. So I imagine that there is a lot of integration that they've done that allows for better caching with the combination of WordPress and Nginx. Although WordPress, the downloadable software package, is less well documented with Nginx. So the default install that my mom might do if she decides to put up a writing blog someday will likely be an install of Apache, or actually, speaking of my mom, she probably would end up using WordPress.com.
Right.
But in the event that someone, you know, moderately technical goes ahead and installs WordPress from WordPress, the documentation is still very heavy on Apache. So that's a space that we could use community support in too.
Yeah.
More documentation for that.
I know one of the you know, you mentioned the server utilization, essentially, that we can reduce by using caching and reverse proxies. It's interesting too that this started around the same time as we started seeing things like the dig effect, right? Which, you know, dig is kind of gone now, but I think we still call it the dig effect or the Reddit effect.
Slashdot
was even before dig, right? So,
yeah.
But it seems like, you know, as opposed to a server problem, it's more of a bandwidth issue a lot of times. So does the caching also reduce the size of the file, the overall size of the file that's being transmitted back to the end user?
The caching won't by default, but you can turn on gzip delivery as long as your end client browser can make use of it. So you can do compression with Nginx when it's a proxy or when it is a web server.
Great, great. So those are some of my high-level questions. I had to get them out there so that we had to level set there. Well, you mentioned modules before, so I'm kind of interested, what modules are available now and how are people using them?
There are tons of modules available at this point. Like I went recently and looked in GitHub and just saw the list of, you know, the top even most favorited 10 or 100 is pretty substantive. There are a lot of modules that allow for some of the more nuanced engagement with the content delivery. So I spoke about Yichun and his modules. One of his modules is a Lua module, which allows you to do Lua scripting that manipulates content. So there's also, he also has done an Open Resty module. There are modules, there's a PageSpeed module out of Google. There's going to be a lightning talk on that. I'd have to look up another list of common modules. There's an Apache Passenger module. There's lots of pieces that allow you to integrate more tightly with other pieces of the application stack and or manipulate your content more directly. Right now, the modules can only be compiled in at compile time, which is a challenge. That's one of the things that we're working on in the roadmap, is finding a way to make it a more dynamically loadable or at least more friendly module setup.
So a couple things I was able to Google for while Aaron was chatting with you. I found a JavaScript module. So there you can actually embed the V8 JavaScript engine in Nginx and use it to manipulate data on the way in. I think that would pretty much eliminate the need for Node.js. We actually had some people in the chat room before we started talk about Node.js and trying to compare the relative features of those. And I said, well, Nginx is probably highly optimized for what it knows how to do. So I imagine it would meet something more general like Node.js. But if you can still put JavaScript in there, that's pretty much... It's pretty much a deal killer for that if you just sort of realize how everything comes together.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's fantastic about this community, is they take the nut of what we have built and that the team has maintained with such amazing attention to detail. They take the nut of that and then they're able to extend it with modules to do whatever they need. And we want to make sure that as we grow the open source project and the company, that we make that even easier for the users and the community to continue to add to that. Because my background is the MySQL community and the ecosystem that was built around that, because of pluggable things like pluggable storage engines and the ability to interact with it as a brick in a wall, as opposed to, you know, the only piece of software that you use, is what made that such a vibrant community, is what made that such a vibrant user space and kept it so very active for so very long.
And the other couple things, again, follow up to Aaron's questions there. It looks like there is both a rate limiting module, which would be interesting if you had a dynamic content generator in the back and you didn't want to completely swamp it when you got too many things. You could have Nginx in front of that, like just drop connections, as it needed to, so you weren't swamping your back end engine.
Yeah.
So that's
kinda
there
cool. Are modules that do all sorts of things. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
And it will also do forward proxy. I just quickly Googled for Nginx forward proxy. That's amazing. This thing has been so well used everywhere that if you Google Nginx and what you want to do, there is at least a dozen blog hits about it.
Yeah. I've learned so many things that I never knew it was able to do from when I first heard about it. It's really impressive. One of the comparisons that we make is that we do, you know, the five or six things we do really, really well. And we focus on those instead of trying to extend to be able to do everything. Because Apache has gotten to be sort of the kitchen sink, which is great and it's really useful and it can do almost anything. But that's not the market we're after. We're not after the, you know, just turn on that flag and off it goes. We're more interested in a market that needs to go super fast, is really excited about the technology space, and is trying to push content as quickly and efficiently forward as we can.
Now, let's talk about the community, because obviously that's going to be your primary focus these days.
Yep.
When Igor is his name? Is that
guy Igor, created? Yep.
So when he created it initially, and you said it was like closed source for a couple of years, what was his motivation?
Well, it was more beta and internally how he had written it for his company. So I wouldn't necessarily say closed source. I would say not yet licensed.
Not yet licensed. Okay, I'll use your words for that then. So what was the motivation then to open source it? I know that this is still pretty – well, actually, no, that's not too early in the whole open source is better paradigm. But what was he thinking he was going to get out of having it be open source?
I think it was his intent all along to open source it. He just is a very he's a person who wants to put something good forward. So I think he sat on it for 2 years trying to make it a really good product that was very useful. And I wouldn't even say sat on it because he was developing it actively and making use of it. But I believe the intent was to have it open source from the beginning. And he did do that in October of 2004. So my suspicion is that he actually was more about trying to make it a good and useful thing before he put it out than trying to make a decision to open source it.
And how has the community worked since then? Is it just Igor deciding what's in the next release, or is there some sort of governance committee now, or how did that evolve?
Well, for a long time, it was Igor and the group at Rambler that had been doing most of the development. There have, over the last 10 years, there have been more community patches accepted as time has gone on. And there are a few well-known community contributors who actually, submit patches pretty regularly, and those go in. But it's still a very small core group that touches Nginx Core. And that's why we have the modules, is because we want the community to be able to extend in that space. But the core group is now mostly collected, although not entirely, mostly collected under the Nginx company, which is trying to continue to make both both a fantastic, non-blocking, event-driven, highest possible speed and efficiency web server, proxy server, edge delivery server as they can, while making a space for, as I described, that ecosystem around it of further contributions from the community.
So the development is mostly happening then within, the actual committers then are all pretty much within Nginx.com, or is there also, is the development
within
also happening
Nginx
in the open?
Inc.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, within Nginx Inc. So yep. the people who have commit bits are all in there. There's not an open development for that side of it.
No, at this point there isn't for the core. We do accept patches, and some of them from people that have worked with us will get committed by the team. But there are people that have worked with us or worked with Nginx for years, and patches come in and they're reviewed. There's a very active development list that handles both the core development and the module development. But yes, the features for the most part are determined by the company and the direction that Igor and his team want to take the project. Now, they take feedback from the community on all of that as well, but it is a more centrally managed project.
Are the sources public and commit by commit available, or is it only tarball releases?
No, the sources are available. Yeah, you can pull it down. And as I said, if you're building a module, if you're building a module for it, you need access to the full sources. And there's an active repository for people to look at, and so that's all available and managed managed transparently.
Okay, yeah, I'm just trying to see the level. Some people call it open source when all they do is publish a quarterly tarball. So I'm just wondering if it was that, or whether it's commit by commit. I can see actually what the developers are heading towards, or I might be able even to help with some problem that they're seeing in their bug tracker. Is the bug tracker also public?
The bug tracker is also public. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Cool. So, okay, it's a lot more like an ordinary open source thing, though. But I would be remiss if I didn't start talking about the things that I know Simon is always the most irritated by, and that is that we do actually have a freemium model here. There actually is a commercial version that has more features. Can you talk about what some of those differences are and why they decided not to just open source everything?
That is That is something we're still sorting out right now, honestly. So we only released Nginx Plus in August of last year. Mm-hmm. And so right now what we've been doing is putting features into Nginx Plus that we think are more focused on enterprise and the users who might be willing to pay for support and services primarily, but then also mm-hmm. features that are, you know, simplify and tie into enterprise systems. So for example, a contentious one that we've talked about before is putting syslog, the ability to send logging to syslog into the Nginx Plus version. And one of the things that, one of the reasonings that we came up with for putting it there is syslog is not the most efficient way to log to disk. And we really want to keep the open source version a pristine, fastest possible, best event-driven, non-blocking sort of server as we can. And syslog is a, if you want to shoot yourself in the foot, if you need it for, you know, your business needs or your infrastructure within an enterprise, that makes sense. We can give it to you, but it's not what we consider best practices because it could potentially slow your server. So by trying to keep sort of the pristine best practices, best functioning capabilities in the open source and putting the things that are the nice to have and the simplifiers and the easier to manage or more familiar tool sets for the users who are in the enterprise, then there's an interesting trade-off there for them. So they can choose to pay for support and, you know, be able to integrate with, you know, the bigger, say, syslog engine within an enterprise so that now, you know, it's sent out to syslog and syslog is now aggregated and now they use Splunk to take a look at it. So we're trying to put features in Nginx Plus that exist as things that are more common in an enterprise while keeping the free version the simplest, most straightforward. And it might, you know, in a couple of cases be a little bit more work to write a couple of lines of script to manage logs and rotate logs and send them out to whatever your log aggregation service is. But you are able to do that because we presume that you have you know, those skills and are happy to do that if you make the choice to use the open source version.
Well, I'm sort of curious, are those things that are extra cost featured in Nginx Plus, are they using the standard module interface or are there actual modifications to the core to support that stuff?
You know, I am not entirely sure. I'm reasonably confident it's within modules, but I'm not positive.
Which also means that there could be a marketplace for people to write the equivalent open source for all the features that you're having people pay for.
Absolutely. Yep. And in fact, some of those exist.
Ah, okay, cool. So I could actually get, yeah. if I'm willing to mix and match a little bit, I could probably do most of what the Nginx Plus does. So what I'm really buying is support
and services.
And guarantees. Yes, right. Cool.
And consultation. Insurance. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm well aware of that for some of the clients that I have to deal with. So I'm very, very good
at
that.
And that's the thing. Being able to continue to support the open source product through the need that through making this available to enterprises who feel they need to have support or services or insurance or their, you know, I need this as a checkbox. Being able to offer that and then also be able to fund that development back into the open source or fund a lot of the development back into open source is great. We haven't talked about Speedy at all.
Actually, that came up in the chat room. So I was going to just go to some chat room questions. And that was top of the list. So talk about Speedy.
So we just released 1.5.10, which is our mainline release of the open source product. And we put in Speedy 3.1. in that. So that was a big deal. Lots of people have been asking questions about that. So Speedy 2 has been in Nginx since I think 1.3.8. 1.4, all of the stable release has Speedy 2 in it currently. And then all of 1.5 up until 1.5.10 has Speedy 2 in it as well. But we just got, and we were really excited about it, it's a new feature. We just got Speedy added, Speedy 3.1 added to 1.5.10. And mid-year this year, because people are going to ask, mid-year this year, we are taking the 1.5 mainline and moving it to a 1.6 stable. So mid-year this year, Speedy 3.1 should come to our stable release.
Great. That was the question specifically around 3.1, so I'm glad I'm glad to hear your answer, and I'm sure the chat room is too. I mean, just so people know, Speedy is the Google stuff that makes things faster, basically, right?
Yes, and that's about the level at which I understand it. It's, I have like three tabs open in my browser to understand more about Speedy, but it is part of the HTTP 2.0 standards that are coming out, so it is definitely a Google project. They're moving it forward. We've had support from a number of companies, and I'm loathed to mention one because I'll forget three others, in supporting us to do work to put Speedy 3.1 into the open source project.
Cool. Another question from the chat room is around administration. So, and we didn't really talk about this. So, how easy is it to install and administer? Is there? I'm assuming if you're running a Linux operating system that you can just install it with a package management system.
Yep. So we distribute packages for the Red Hat and CentOS ecosystems. We also distribute a Debian Ubuntu package. There are Debian maintainers who make a separate package, and Ubuntu is putting Nginx into their next release in April. So it's going to be actually mainline and not in a side repository. I'm not an Ubuntu person by default, so I'm learning all of their package repository naming, so I'll probably not get it right. So, but it's going into the main line of the new release that's coming up, which is very exciting. But there's one other thing I want to mention, since you brought up distros, and I forgot to mention it under Speedy. Just before we cut 1.6, we're also going to make a package 1.5 for CentOS 6.5, which actually has SSL 1.0.1.
We get any more revision numbers in there?
No.
That's so good that you're able to keep up with all that. I'm really impressed.
Well, thank you. I'm thinking I'm getting all the numbers properly right, but we are actually going to cut a release that will have Speedy 3.1 for CentOS 6.5 and Red Hat RHEL 6.5 just before we cut the 1.6 release, because right now our packages for CentOS and RHEL don't have Speedy 3.1 support because only 6.5 has the most recent and required version of SSL in it.
Right, so you're gated by Red Hat and Red Hat variants for that one, it sounds like.
Yep. Yep. But that should come out just about the time we go to release the 1.6. So we're working on getting one of those out there for people as well. And if they want to, they can always compile it themselves.
Cool. A couple other questions from the chat room. I think this was an anonymous user. One of the web such and such users wants to know what your plant is. In the background there, we can see a plant growing under a scant bit of light there.
My skylight.
Yeah, it says, what is the plant or whatever in her room? Is that some sort of open ceiling greenhouse thingy?
So it is a skylight. Let's see if I can do my gestures properly. There we go. So I have a skylight over there, and that is a succulent because I travel so much that I have only succulents in my house. there we go. We're going to zoom.
Oh, that's a better shot. There we go.
Yeah, it's this really weird succulent, and I honestly don't know the name of it, but it has this enormous bulbous base thing to it that is where it traps all the water, and then it puts out these little spidery tendrils.
Cool. So it does pretty well up there with in the skylight, probably with minimal water. And then the other question I had is, I believe this was from Replicant X3R0. What is the headset that you're using? And I guessed it was one of the Plantronics gaming headsets. And you said you had a gaming background, so I'm curious if that's what it is.
I did. I did.
Oh, it's the razor.
Think
I bet
it's Lantronics. It's a razor. Yeah.
John called it. John called it. RTD. He called it absolutely. And I forgot because that's what I had seen. I was debating between that one and the Plantronics that I got. I ended up getting the Plantronics. Was a little cheaper and it had really good sound. So I went for because when I do that,
really good sound.
Yeah, it was highly rated. And I wanted something that would work well when I do Twit podcast from home, and it works really well. But anyway, good. I'm glad we got that off the table. That
it's
question
important.
Is resolved.
Anyone else have fashion questions? Come on.
Well, that's what we're all about here on Floss Weekly. It's not just about the open source. It's also about
free and open
what
source
are people
fashion.
Wearing? What do they look like? What
we'll
are
start
you
a new show
this
called
spring?
Start a new show called This Week in Plants.
Hey, I'll do that.
We could talk about whatever's in the background of whatever we're doing in the terms of the show we're doing.
That's right.
I wanted to ask some questions more about community and your role with the community. How do you envision going forward bringing Nginx, the awareness about Nginx, to more people? I mean, obviously, if it's used by 14% of the websites, there's already an active user base that knows about this. But how do you get to that next 14% if that's your goal?
Well, it was really fascinating. I was at FOSDEM a week and a half ago, I guess, and I was running into people there who hadn't heard of Nginx, which just actually very much surprised me. But like Debian contributors, Debian open source or Debian core distribution contributors hadn't heard of it. And I'm like, well, this is really strange, because I sat in the distributions room most of the weekend because I wanted to learn more about how the distribution channel works with upstreams, because that's one of the things that I'm helping with, is trying to get Nginx into Ubuntu's mainline. So I spent time learning and talking to them, and these are people who they're not end web administrators, which is interesting. And so lots and lots of people who are administrators are more familiar with this than the developers. So one of the things that I'm working on is clearly an outreach campaign. So there's going to be way more writing, more blogging, more content for our website, more documentation. One of the things that that we recently did was hire a both Russian and English speaking documentation specialist, so that he can pull information out of the team in Russia and make it exist in both Russian and English. Because sometimes the early documentation, for sure, and even some of the documentation that exists today is clearly not English as a first language. So we're trying to get to a space where we can get really good usable user documentation and get more content and more notice to all of the content that's out there. So more amplification of people that are writing about it. As you said, you can do a web search on Nginx and, you know, how to get how to get my plant watered from remotely while I'm traveling. And suddenly you'll find a way to have Nginx help you with that.
That's the mod plant module.
It's the mod plant module, exactly.
mod underscore plant watering.
Yes.
Right. Yep. I was working on that earlier. So there's a lot of that already, and being able to figure out a way to amplify that and coalesce it and collect it into a space that looks more like a community hub. Because right now the community exists in a lot of places. There's a bit of an IRC community. There's a lot of mailing list traffic, and that's where most of our devs actually spend their time in answering questions. So if you want a technical question answered, that's the best place to go, is nginx-dval@nginx.org or nginx@nginx.org. Those are the two best places to get technical questions answered. We have a little bit of a conversation that happens on Twitter. We've got, we don't really have a company blog at this point, so that's going to be happening in the next few weeks. And we're going to be generating a lot more content in English, as well as continuing to find opportunities to do public speaking, share user stories. We have some of the biggest names in websites using Nginx, so making better use of that and sharing those stories and sharing those use cases and sharing those experiences is part of what I'm doing. So I'm doing a lot of facilitation of other people's content right now, as well as starting to generate some for Nginx.
Yeah, success stories are always really handy. Like, this actually worked better for us to do it this way. I mean, and just to give you my own history and how I came into Nginx is that it was suggested to me many, many years ago, probably close to the 04, 05 timeframe to look at Nginx, but the documentation was so poor. I said, this may work well as a reverse proxy. It sort of looks like it can do that, but I wouldn't have the slightest clue from this documentation how to completely configure it. And some of the documentation was in Russian. That didn't help either. And so I kind of set it aside. And then I spent a couple, almost 2 years contracting to Media Temple. And there they were using Nginx for a lot of things. And I said, I want to take a look at this again because, and then the docs were much more up to date. And I could see it also do content serving, which I went, okay, so it's not just reverse proxy. It actually has some cool tools and rewrite tools. And then just about a year and a half ago, we had my client for InsideCruises.com. We had some pages that were getting beaten up because they would, a magazine would post an ad about an upcoming cruise. And then, of course, everybody would all go there at the same time. And so I was just using straight Apache to serve this. And Apache also had a CGI component to it so they could actually enroll in the course. And I realized that I could put Nginx in front of that and serve all the static content directly from Nginx, and then, but still redirect the long-standing URLs for the CGI side of it back to the now mostly dormant Apache process that was sitting there. And it really solved the problem well. It was like, this was too simple, all really nice.
It's a fantastic use case because it's about making use of what you have. It's not a rip and replace. It's not this is better to the exclusion of Apache, but it's about making use of the tools you have in the way that best takes advantage of them. So Nginx in this case serves static content like that. So use that for static content and then, proxy back to the CGI on Apache. And so it's not a rip and replace. It's sort of a nestle off to the side and then do some configuration and off you go.
And I'll tell you the next geeky part I did to it just to impress a little bit more my audience. My client was maintaining short URLs underneath his domain, like insidecruises.com/SA20 to go to the Scientific American 20 course. And then it would redirect via mod rewrites, external mod rewrites in the Apache source. I wrote a Perl script to take that and translate it into Nginx's format. And it's on a watch file system, so as that file gets updated, it automatically generates the Nginx file that I include, and then I do a kill hub to Nginx to reload its configuration.
Yep, which actually is another thing that's super awesome about Nginx. We can actually do on-the-fly upgrades with just a restart of the process, a hub of the process. So.
So you have a little to do with OSCON, one of the program chairs. Do you expect more Nginx talks at OSCON? Is there any sort of hint of that for maybe this year?
I have just started reviewing talks for this year, and while I encouraged people to put in talks for OSCON, the program committee does most of the selection. They do all of the rating, so I won't be, shall we say, pushing Nginx content, but I'm very hopeful that we'll get a couple of talks in there at least.
And so you, Nginx has been, you have the summit coming up. Is this the first kind of event like this that is specifically about Nginx?
It is. We did one user meetup about a year ago that was about 50 people, and that was the first thing that Nginx as a company had sponsored independently of, say, any sort of community events. I'm sure there were other community events that happened before that. But this Nginx Summit is the first time that we're going to bring people together. It'll be in San Francisco, and as I said, it's February 25th. And the morning portion is fundamentals of Nginx. So very much, this is Nginx. This is why it was built. Some of the stuff I covered today. Here are a bunch of use cases. Now let's do some exercises. And then the afternoon is going to be the more advanced topics, just as a couple of talks and some lightning talks, so long form talks, and then some lightning talks from users about their use cases. And then we'll have social time to, bring the community together and listen and learn from there.
Now, we actually had a question from the audience. Just scrolling back real quickly to try to find it. But the question basically was, I think it was Martin. Yeah, Martin wanted to know, and actually I sort of answered my own question there. Is there still a place for Apache in this space? And can Apache and Nginx coexist nicely?
Yeah, they actually can. And they, again, it's playing to the strengths of each thing. So Nginx does a few things incredibly fast, and Apache can do everything. So instead of sending everything to Apache and loading it down with some of the more highly concurrent and simpler and more straightforward pieces like static content serving or proxying or edge caching, instead of loading Apache down with that, because it takes so much more overhead to run Apache doing that, use Apache for the hard things, like you described, the CGI rendering, or I'm trying to think of other things that are in Apache, because the Apache can do almost anything, it seems. It's a crazy awesome tool, but it's also big, you know. So.
Well, it's like the heavy lifting for Mod Perl, for example, generating templated information and using the Catalyst framework or something like that, or PHP, right. Even. I mean, if there is a PHP module. For Nginx, which you said there was, you still got to be careful not to block. And so you might want to have Apache running PHP, doing the heavy lifting in the back, and then use Nginx as sort of the proxy down to it, and that way it can also sort of the static content, get that away from the PHP processes.
Yep.
Cool. Well, we're almost out of time. I need to ask you, well, first I need to ask Aaron. Do you have any more questions, Aaron?
Aaron,
you caught me offline. You caught me off guard. Do I have any more? Sorry, I'm chatting at the chat room. Do I have any more questions? I did have a question, but now that you asked me, I forgot what it was. So.
Sorry, Aaron.
I didn't write it down. Normally, I write these down so I don't lose track of them. I forgot what the question was. So sorry.
Well, then
wait. I know what it is. Okay.
Go.
So I'm a storage guy, right? I work in the storage industry. And one thing that we work on is, for me specifically, I deal a lot with Oracle Database, people that run Oracle databases, and trying to find ways to speed up an Oracle database, because an Oracle database is really concerned with response times. The more transactions I can get through to the database, and this is true for any database, not just Oracle database, the faster my application that's running on top of that database will run and respond. And I can process more user requests that way. So much like we've been talking about with caching and proxying, it's very similar. Now, one thing that we've done on the storage side, and you mentioned storage a couple times, is that we're starting to bring in hooks into flash, right? So SSDs and flash storage, and using that as an extension of memory in order to process those transactions faster. So my logical question for you is, after all that explanation, is there anything similar that happens in Nginx, or Apache for that matter, I don't know, where you can use flash storage to increase the amount of memory you have available for processing web transactions?
I don't know of anything within Nginx directly. I know it can certainly use flash as a storage space for example, its caches, things like that. But I don't know of anything, or I should say, I'm thinking more SSD as opposed to flash. I'm sorry, I'm confusing those as well, or conflating them. I don't know of anything specific that we've worked on using flash as an extension, but that's something that we can always look at.
Yes, I'm going to look at it right now as Randall closes
on the
up
Googles.
The show. That's right.
He's doing the Googling, man. He's going for the Googles. Hey, I have another use case for this that it just occurred to me when Aaron was talking about databases and using Nginx and somehow to speed up other things like that. You could build an application server that takes a REST API and does specific sort of calculations and database accesses and updates, and then use Nginx as a proxy in between there so that it would hit the API less often for things that were more slow moving.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. You can proxy and cache almost anything you put Nginx in front of.
Very cool. And okay, so I had the one other question here, and then I'll ask the other question I was going to ask you before.
Which is two questions still left.
that's just complicated. No, there's actually two, and then there's two more after that. But let's not confuse our audience right now. So, Nginx is primarily configuration file driven. Are there any kind of helpful UIs that people have written for Nginx to do configuration, at least the simple kinds of configuration that might be the most common?
I actually haven't noticed or found those yet. I've been with Nginx proper for about 2 months now, so I haven't run into those from the community side, so forgive me.
Yeah.
But there is another space where Nginx Plus comes into play, which is we're setting up an API for configuration within Nginx Plus, so you can do configuration programmatically now with that.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. So my one final question that I was going to ask before, and then there's two questions after that, just to confuse you again.
I'm just going to ask you three.
How can you have one final question and then two questions after that?
Because of the two special questions I have to ask everybody. So if it's not okay. The final question for her. <it's>, they let just anybody run this show, apparently.
Statement is invalid.
We're almost out of time. Is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
No, I think we actually covered the big things that I knew I wanted to see. I'm looking up here at my notes. I'm pretty sure we covered all the things that I wanted to make sure we hit on.
Very good.
Because it was speedy. Yeah. It was the summit. It was community stuff. It was future event things. It was making sure I mentioned 10th anniversary. Yeah, I think we've covered them.
Cool, cool. And I have my two final questions that I will get yelled at if I don't ask them. And these really are the final questions.
I'm counting down.
What's your favorite scripting language, if you have one?
Ooh, so I cut my teeth on Perl, which, of course, you will appreciate.
Yay! One on my side.
But I do more Bash when I do scripting anymore. So I'm very much a pragmatist at this point, and I am not a programmer. I am way more on scripting side, but I did cut my teeth on Perl. So I had to say that for your sake.
Awesome. Did you read my books?
I did. In fact, they have a place of honor and shrine in my house.
Awesome. Awesome. If I ever get to Seattle, I'll sign them for you.
There you go.
Yes. And what's your favorite text editor?
I came out of the sysadmin world is VI.
Yay.
Well, one out of two ain't bad. Well, Sarah, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And again, I anticipate this being one of the most heavily downloaded shows that we have. So you're famous in all sorts of ways now. I appreciate you coming on talking about Nginx and informing a lot of people who might not even have known that they were using Nginx every day, and to tell them more about what that was. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
Very good. That was Sarah Novotny, who is the current community manager for Nginx and also a technical evangelist. What do you think, Aaron?
I'm really glad to learn more about it. I mean, I was just trying to set up a reverse proxy the other day at my house, so this is very timely, and I was using Apache, and I failed miserably, mostly because I was trying to do it on FreeBSD, and I didn't have Apache compiled with mod proxy, blah, 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 but it wasn't because of the setup. The setup was actually easy, but I still couldn't get it to work because I couldn't get it to follow URLs. I know that there's ways to do it. Eventually, I just said, you know what, forget it. I'll just set up a special port on the server that I want to point to and do a forward from the router, port forward over to that port, and now it all works fine. If you want to see what my Open Sprinkler website looks like, you can go to, I think you can probably get to it from the sourceshow.org/8000. I'll just put that out there. It's all password protected, so I don't care. Anyway, so this is all relevant and interesting from a personal standpoint, but also from, looking at this from a, how do you deal with, maybe you want to start your own business doing hosting or something. I'm sure that all the hosting companies out there are using this, right? Because it doesn't make sense if you're not. You're going to end up in a world of hurt. So I think this kind of stuff is really interesting. It sounds really interesting. All the new stuff that they're doing and getting into, I think, is really helpful. So it's just an interesting area of the internet, and it's an interesting point of internet history to think back. There was a time when we didn't need any of this, right? And an HTTP server was very basic. It got a request, it delivered what you wanted, and then that was it. And now there's all this kind of stuff in the middle that makes it all work. So for me, it's just a really interesting thing to learn about.
Yeah, and I have to say, actually, that the Nginx, I've been doing reverse proxies with Apache for a long time, and you're right. There's these subtle things that break. Like, even on my current web server, I'm so embarrassed. Stonehenge.com, unfortunately, is a shoemaker's children neglect. I really am not doing anything with it. And there's some, if you go to the wrong kind of URL, like you hit a directory and you don't have a slash on the end of it, you get redirected to port 8001, which is completely useless.
Yeah.
You can't get to that from the outside. So I broke it somewhere, and I don't remember how to fix it. But I'm actually going to rewrite all that using Apache with an Nginx layer in front of it instead. It's still going to be mod Perl behind the scenes on the Apache side, but I haven't got a spare weekend to do that with yet. Right. So I've basically been toiling on that. But yeah, it was trivial to set it up with Nginx reverse proxy, and even redirecting the CGI URL to the actual Apache that was running there on Neil's machine. So I'd really look at that. It's also, again, it's Every time I look at this, there are more modules. And when I was Googling it, I found there's a JavaScript engine, you know, that plugs into this. And there's a this and there's a that. And this thing has become really sort of the universal glue of all the, at least two or three of the major protocols in on the net. And that's really handy stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Well, we have a full Q1 schedule, I'm happy to announce. We have two new projects added to the schedule. So let's talk about that. Next week we have Go, which is a board game with white and blacks. No, I can only use that joke one more time, so I had to use it this time.
Hey, I thought it was funny.
It's a language from Google, gotten a lot of press over the years, really forwarded by a lot of people. But we'll be speaking with one of the key people from that project next week. The week after that, we have Hydra, which is a distributed data processing and storage system. So things like Hive and those kinds of things where you have large data and you want to get some sort of analysis out of it. Hydra, though, is more actually optimized for real-time analysis. So it actually can give you information in real time as data is coming in, which and it does it by doing incremental calculations. I was reading about it a couple days ago to kind of get a better sense of what it's about. So instead of like the way Hive does it, which is it distributes the calculations all the way down and it has to keep recomputing them all the way down, Hydra can actually sort of keep them up to date in real time too. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Just added to the schedule, I don't know a lot about this, but Monogame. Monogame is an implementation of the Microsoft XNA architecture, whatever that is. Open source implementation, of course. Apparently, though, you can build games for Windows. This is primarily about games. You can build games for Windows using their sort of universal layer. And this Monogame allows you to almost immediately port that with 95% of your code reused on all sorts of platforms, Android, iOS, OS X, Linux, all the way across the board. So this really makes it interesting. Like the chat room's telling me, I thought Microsoft killed XNA. Well, maybe this project has limited use then, but anyway, we're coming out in 2 weeks. And for those of you that miss the CMS series that we did last year, we've got Typo3, which apparently in Europe is probably the biggest enterprise CMS in use. So we'll have a CMS show in case people missed that, missed the whole sequence of CMSs we did last year. Just also added to the schedule. I talked about them a couple of times, but they hadn't actually scheduled. We've got GNU Health. This is a award-winning project that is basically hospital management from top to bottom, patient records, billing, all sorts of great stuff like that, health records, things like that. And one of the things I do know is that Jamaica's not just an island, it's a country. Yeah, Jamaica, the country, has adopted this from top to bottom. So all of their public hospitals and maybe some of the private hospitals are going to be shifting over to GNU Health. So it's a lot of commitment behind that and a lot of publicity because of that. And finally, rounding out Q1, we've got CoreOS, or CoreOS, I guess, which is Linux for massive server deployments. And I don't know anything more about it than that. I just copied that phrase right from the front page of their website. You can see the shows that we have upcoming after that, or at least see the shows we're considering, by going to twit.tv/floss. Our big spreadsheet is linked there. And if there's anything that you don't see on that sheet, the right way to have it happen is you email the project leader and have the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. The URL is not the URL, the mailing address. It feels like Monday and it's already Wednesday. Anyway, it's also right there. Then you can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+. You can also follow us on Floss Weekly on Twitter. We have a live chat. It was very lively today. We had a bunch of excitement about this show so far. So that's at live.twit.tv as we are going. We normally tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. We're the earliest show on the Twit Network. If you go to the spreadsheet, you can find out if we have a variation in that. Sometimes we have to move around a little bit. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter and also on most of the other social services. But Randall L. Schwartz on Google+, that would be the best place to get my current wisdom. I sort of use that as my primary blog. I'll be speaking at SoCal Linux Expo, also called Scale, coming up in a few weeks. I'm going to talk about my half-life with Perl, which is a talk I gave at OSCON last year, well-received, and so I'll be doing it again as an encore presentation, talking about the 25 years of Perl and the slightly over 50 years of my life, and how they overlapped and intertwined with each other. I'm also going to be there as Floss Weekly. I might do some live interviews there, but most of what I'll be doing is taking names and... what's the other part of that phrase? Something in taking names. Anyway, whatever it is, I'll be doing that. I'll be taking names at least for people for future shows. Aaron, you want to plug anything today?
Yeah, sure. I love plugging things. Mm-hmm. So you can follow me on Google Plus. That's where I hang out and talk to folks, post a lot about the different projects I'm working on. I do a lot of making and hacking. So like lately, if you go to Google Plus, you'll notice I've been experimenting with taking an old 15-inch LCD display from an old laptop that was like from 2000. I don't know, two, something like that, taking that old laptop display and getting it to work with my Raspberry Pi. So now I have this nice big 15-inch display that the Raspberry Pi can display to, and I could turn that into a portable display if I wanted to. There's all kinds of things you could do with it. So really, really fun stuff. And also discovering that, you know, you can find places like Weird Stuff Warehouse, which is down local here to, well, not Petaluma, but Sunnyvale, right within walking distance. I did not realize this. Within walking distance of where I work at NetApp is this place called Weird Stuff Warehouse. And they have all this old technology, old floppy drives, lots of CD drives, old cables that you can't find anymore. And they also have these really old laptops, the exact same model that I had that I pulled this display out of for $5. So for five wow. bucks. Plus $30 for the controller, $35, you can have this really nice big display for your Raspberry Pi or other project. That really makes me happy, and I talk about that on Google+. So you have to follow me there. Also, a real quick plug, we had our first meetup for the what's called the Benicia Makerspace. We're starting a makerspace in my hometown of Benicia, and it's really for the surrounding areas, anywhere in Solano County. You know, if you're in Napa or if you're in Antioch, Pleasant Hill, Walnut Creek, Concord, any of those areas, you know, you can come up, and we're going to have our second meeting coming up. The first Monday of every month is what we're shooting for. You can find more about it on meetup.com. I presented Open Sprinkler, which is an open source, open hardware project, which is basically a sprinkler timer irrigation system for your house. That was our first meeting. We're going to be doing 3D printing next month in March. So definitely go check that out if you're local to the area. I'd love to see some familiar faces. Go to meetup.com and RSVP so we know how many people to expect.
Very good, Aaron. Very good. And once again, welcome. No, we got the welcome at the beginning of the show. This is like I've never done this show before, and I can't remember everything I'm supposed to say. I think it's because I've done it so many times that I just have too many things in my head to all do at the same time.
It just comes out.
It just comes out. I know. It proves there's no filter. There's no editing on the show, guaranteed, because otherwise all my flubs would be gone. So thank you again for joining me on the show and asking insightful questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Always glad to come up.
Very good. And we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.